So the question was asked, does the Russian government have any compromising material on President Trump or his family? It was the second part of the question, the question, you know, of a question. But Putin said this, quote, and now to the compromising material. Yeah, I did hear these rumors that we allegedly collected compromising material on Mr. Trump when he was visiting Moscow. Well, distinguished colleagues, let me tell you this. When President Trump was at Moscow back then, I didn't even know he was in Moscow. I treat President Trump with utmost respect. But back then, he was a private individual, a businessman. Nobody informed me that he was in Moscow. Do you know what he didn't say there? He didn't say no. I'm not wrong. He did not say. In fact, Trump didn't say no either. So it was one of those kind of interesting moments where nobody said no. So you got to wonder, you know, are the shower tapes legit? Will we know? I don't know. Let's find out what's going on and talk with our good friend Propane Jane. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So they didn't just say no.
I think that's very interesting indeed. And I do think that what Putin is saying is actually pretty straight up in the sense that he's KGB. I mean, he's known for collecting information about people and surveilling people. And so somebody as high profile as Trump, particularly who is, you know, for years, decades even, been in and out of Russia, begging for money, trying to sell them things, trying to get them to help him out of debt. They know when he's there and what he's doing and what he's asking for. And so I think, you know, even though it's not something that has been explicitly confirmed in terms of the P-tapes or whatever you want to call it, I mean, I think it's not hard to believe or see that a businessman comes into town with his entourage and they supply various women for their pleasure while they're there. And Trump has already made it very clear that he's the type of person that would engage in something like that. And so I think Putin is, you know, it's a non-denial for a reason. I think the likelihood that if he was there, that they would have gotten any sort of information about what he was doing behind closed doors is very high, because why not? Look how you can use it against him and use it against the whole country at this point.
No, and it's scary. Now, you look at today, you could call it the Treason Summit or, you know, the Surrender Summit or the Helsinki Humiliation or whatever you want to, however you want to throw that out there. As I was watching it happen, I couldn't help but think, you know, about our conversations over the last couple of years as, you know, I'm going, is it even possible for him to comprehend that it's even remotely possible that the Russians interfered? Would his ego allow? Because I think this is all about his ego. This is all about diminishing the one accomplishment that he throws out every single time, and that's he beat that woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think he wants to, you know, I think after the election, he told on himself in many ways because he was so focused on the Electoral College vote and that Electoral College map. And in a lot of ways, you know, his focusing on that, I think, shows that that's like a prized possession for him. I mean, he feels like he won it. And I don't think it really matters to him the means by which he won. I don't think that he's incapable of recognizing that he participated in a conspiracy to get ahead. I just think that the world that he's always lived in is nothing but constant conspiracy and corruption and privilege and graft. I mean, this is the world that he comes from. And so for that element of the world, it doesn't matter what steps you took to get there and to win. The only thing that matters to them is that they won.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. Now, there's part of me, and I've been saying this since the beginning, that, you know, I don't know that he was directly, you know, consciously wanting to collude with the Russians. I believe that he's been elbow to elbow with the oligarchs, and it's just how business gets done in his world. But, you know, I look at this and I look at what happened today, and I'm reconsidering everything I've ever believed based on how do you do what he did today?
Well, I mean, you do it when you are thinking of yourself first and foremost. I mean, Donald Trump went into those quote-unquote negotiations or whatever it was. I mean, it was basically just them on a date, I mean, you know, with no one else there. It wasn't something that I think was even meant to be this, you know, what everybody kind of thought it was going to be going into this, like he's going to go in there and he needs to, you know, demand accountability for these 12 indictments. And, you know, there's people sort of wanting him to become presidential, you know, still engaging in this magical thinking, when ultimately, you know, this time last year when he went and met behind closed doors with Putin, we had the whole Syria attacks that had just happened. I mean, he had plenty of reasons to be tough on him then, and he wasn't. So this is a pattern of behavior that he's engaged in ever since he was sworn in, and obviously even before he was actually inaugurated. But I think that ultimately, you know, Putin has this power over him because ultimately Trump feels like he has to please him to keep things, you know, in a favorable light for himself. And I think he really is going in there thinking that he can somehow, you know, prove everybody wrong, and he can be the one that negotiates with North Korea and negotiates with Russia and does all of these really unprecedented things. But ultimately, it just makes him look more guilty because he's not actually being tough on someone who we know at this point has, you know, interfered with our election. And so he just, I think, is looking more guilty because he's just trying to serve his own self-interest.
Now, a lot of people are throwing the T word around, not Trump. you know, they're throwing the traitor word around. Does this, think this rises to that level?
I think it does. I mean, I think the moment that he goes into that meeting with him and smiles at him and winks at him and takes this very submissive position. I mean, he didn't actually get on a knee, but he was genuflecting.
Or something that you would do on a knee. That's really not nice. That's probably true.
But this is the language that people are using because this is how betrayed people feel.
No, I'm right there. But you know, my problem is you know, Trump wants to be that tough guy. You know, he wants to be. What is it about Putin that puts him in a submissive role? I mean, it's very strange to me.
Well, I mean, I think that's sort of the mystique of the sociopath, honestly, and even the narcissist, that they go into situations where they will try to be very charming, and they will use flattery in a lot of ways because that's what works on them. And so he's going into that situation and thinking that he can sort of butter Putin up and he's the art of the deal. And, you know, this is just his way of kind of schmoozing people. And that really you just need to kind of, you know, respect him and talk to him man to man. And, hey, we're both members of the dictator club. And I can just show you how well we get along with each other. You know, it's very reality TV style again. It's very let me show you around my golf course style. He's not treating it like this is actual, you know, this is you going into a conversation with somebody who is a foreign adversary. And he thinks that he's actually winning that person over. And when really Putin is actually playing him.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, I watched this today and, you know, and look, you know, I saw it all weekend long. I mean, you know, all of the attacking our allies, you know, you're saying stuff to the media about Theresa May and then to her face, you know. Yeah, what is that? You know, the whole the whole backstabbing thing, and then, you know, oh, we got a tremendous relationship. I mean, it's almost like a, you know, this kind of bipolar situation, or even schizophrenic. Look, I'm not the psychiatrist, you are, but it just seems like, you know, there's a bunch of different people operating here.
Well, again, this is what somebody who is a sociopath is capable of doing. They're capable of sort of being like water. They can fill whatever container they get filled into. They can take that shape. And so no matter what room he's in, he is sort of appearing to bend himself to what he thinks is going to win over the big dog in the room. I don't know if you have dogs. But, you know, when there's sort of a new dog that comes up against this very dominant dog, what do? They roll over, and they sort of let them sniff them, and they're very submissive, actually, until they can kind of, you know, they want to show deference to who looks like the top dog.
Yeah, and who's the alpha dog. Yeah.
Exactly, and in that dynamic, I think Trump is very much wanting Putin to feel like he's in control. And that's why people really are concerned, I think. I mean, I think people who are across the political spectrum who really haven't been very concerned about the Russia collusion aspect, you know, their ears are standing up because they saw how deferent he was to him. And he wasn't treating him like somebody who had actually attacked us. You know, this would be like George W. Bush going and sitting down with Osama bin Laden and telling him he's a fine person. And he agrees with the way that he does things and winking at him.
Well, if I remember right, George W. Bush did bring him a cake, or George H.W. Bush did bring him a cake.
Well, I mean, you know, that was his dad.
That was a different era.
Right, exactly.
But no, it's just strange to me. And it's one of these things where you just, you have to then ask the question, you know, when does the Republican Party wake up? Because as I laid out earlier in the program, you know, you now have all of these Republicans like Paul Ryan and you know, down the list, you know, Sass and a bunch of them saying, you know, there was meddling. They meddled in the election. There's no question about it. And then, of course, Lindsey Graham throws in there's a difference between meddling and collusion. They still attacked us, regardless of how they still attacked us. Why are you doing nothing?
Well, because ultimately, Trump isn't the only beneficiary of what Russia did in the 2016 election. And this propaganda that was used, this hacked information that was used against congressional Democrats as well. And so that means that there are sitting members of Congress who are ensnared in this as well. And so the question, I think, becomes how many of them are just either, you know, biting their tongue or actually, you know, giving like these wholehearted endorsements of what Donald Trump is doing. How many of them are doing that because they are also compromised or they are also someone who has a conflict of interest when it comes to this propaganda that came from Russia? And so that's the question that we don't have any answers to at this point. Again, you know, we hardly ever talk about the fact that they also hacked the RNC.
Yeah, but we didn't get any juicy stuff out of that. That wasn't the focus of an entire election. That's for later down the road when the Republicans get out of hand.
Well, and is that what Putin is using over not just Trump but the entire Republican Party?
No, you're right. You know, I think we completely forget that the RNC got hacked as well.
Yeah, and so what sort of information is being held over their head as an entire party? I mean, if there are various members of leadership, you know, people who I think, you know, have changed their tune too many times to be, you know, comfortable with, I think we really need to start digging into, okay, did you get money, you know, from these PACs that are associated with Russia? And where do you stand in terms of your own obligations to a foreign adversary at this point? Is this why your hands are tied, and do you need to be just removed from office? Because not only because you're not doing anything, but because you've, you know, engaged in a criminal treasonous enterprise at this point.
It's just, it's almost, it's my, so do you see a point at which even the Trump supporters look at this and go, this is too far? Is this that moment? Because, you know, I said earlier that it's my view that, you know, up until this moment, you could make the argument that a Trump supporter was just, just blindly ignorant or blissfully ignorant or whatever. Mm-hmm. This display today is that moment to where you're either in one of two camps now. There's no middle ground. You're either, a knuckle dragger and a mouth breather and just completely brain dead, or you're in on it. You're complicit. You're actively working to destroy the institutions that this country was built on. There's no middle ground. Or am I too black and white in this?
No, I don't think you're too black and white. I mean, I went shopping at Barnes & Noble last weekend.
They still have those?
Yeah, they do, actually. And, right when you come through the entrance, they had this table in the front that said dystopian novel. And they have, Fahrenheit 451. They have Handmaid's Tale. I mean, they have all of these books. All of these Orwellian books.
Those historical novels.
And I think, and I just sort of sat there for a second and just thought, man, this is the climate that we're living in. I mean, this is this is what people are interested in consuming. They're wise to put this out right now because these are the times that we're living in, and people are we don't really have answers for this. I mean, this is truly unprecedented, and I don't think anybody knows what to do. I mean, even the Republicans, not that I think they genuinely care about doing what's right and what's in the best interest of this country right now, but I think even they are just stunned and don't know what to say. That not necessarily that Trump is doing things that are questionable and corrupt and unstable, but just that he can't keep it together better than this, that there's just no mechanism for him looking less guilty. And how much harder it now becomes to stand next to him. I think even they are stunned at what he's done today.
Yeah, in fact, Republican operative Rick Wilson, who is not a Trump supporter, he tweeted out a picture today of George W. Bush sitting behind the desk about to give the speech, after 9/11, where with the words, I spoke with Osama. Mm-hmm. He says he didn't do it. And, it got me to thinking of, look, we were physically attacked. You saw the planes go into the towers, even though there are some who say that those weren't actually planes and the towers didn't actually come down or whatever the hell the argument is.
Right.
But we saw that happen. We saw the physical destruction. I would argue that this attack, this cyber attack, is just as troubling.
Yeah, it is. But I think maybe people, because of just how polarized we are politically, they're half of the country is unable to sort of just accept and acknowledge that, because that means that their choice wasn't the right choice, and it wasn't the winning choice, and it was actually a choice that was highly compromised by a cyber attack. And also by all of the other things that are there, the racism, the misogyny, the other things that they just don't own either. But I think that they really did put their hopes and their dreams in this man, and it's very hard for them to see him as anything other than what they've inflated him to be.
Yeah, I think about the average voter that I know, who's a Trump supporter. There's part of me that goes, yeah, maybe I get it, but someone like John Kelly. I mean, I look at him every day, every time I see a picture of him, and I go, what exactly are you doing? You are an American hero. What are you doing still sitting next to this guy? And look, I guess on Friday, the picture that came out of him being very uncomfortable, I guess the argument is he didn't get breakfast. I don't buy it. And today the picture of him, sitting with the rest of them across the table from Putin, I'm going, what the hell are you doing there?
I mean, if he doesn't resign tomorrow, it's pretty clear, that he's just going down with the ship.
Any hope?
I see generals, I see, people who are well-respected leaders in the intelligence community and in the military community who are just downright appalled by this. And I don't see how someone with his credentials can still stand there. I mean, we have joked about Alan Dershowitz and the people on Martha's Vineyard, ostracizing him. But for a lot of the people who, you know, come from that, like, law and order, military-industrial complex wing of the Republican Party, I mean, this is a very interesting moment. I mean, you know, they have a chance to not be hypocrites here. But
any chance that happens?
I don't know. I mean, at this point, everything is turned upside down. Yeah. You know, I mean, you don't even really know where the national security community. I mean, obviously, you have Dan Coats that is firmly stating, yes, they did interfere with our election. This is something that we should be taking seriously. But Trump is, like, openly disagreeing with him. And even though Trump is by no means an expert in foreign policy or anything that has to do with, like, protecting our national security, there are certain people that will just take his side because, you know, they trust him for some reason. But these very serious people, again, you know, who are former military, I mean, veterans, these groups, I mean, this is a moment, I think, where they really have to ask themselves some very tough questions, you know, because they raised holy hell about people kneeling during the anthem at football games. And this is a moment where this man has literally stood next to somebody who attacked us and helped him steal our election, actually. And he basically patted him on the back and gave him permission to do it again.
Or on the top of his head, either way.
Yeah.
Wow. And you're right. The kneeling thing. I forgot to bring that up, you know, because you've got, you know, surrender, you know, the surrender summit here, or, you know, like I said, the treason summit, whichever you want to call it, that the kneeling much worse, evidently.
Yeah. I mean, the hypocrisy is just, it's rampant. I mean, you know, there are service members who have risked their lives to collect the intelligence that they've collected on this man for years. And think how many people have lost their jobs who have in some ways gone down in disgrace. I mean, think about James Comey, think about McCabe, you know, they were basically ousted from their jobs, their lifelong career they had in law enforcement, because they were seeking the truth about what happened in the election.
Yeah. So let me ask you last line of questioning, because we need to bring this up. People need to be able to wake up, or, you know, go to bed without feeling that the walls are closing, or wake up feeling that, hey, the end of the world isn't coming, and, you know, go spend every dollar on the lottery or whatever the hell people do at the end of the world. How do you deal with this? How should folks give us some you know, some of that psych talk?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, on the one end, avoiding this is not going to make it go away. I think it's still there. It's still something that we have to address. And this is one of those moments where we really have to be as proactive as we can be, you know, without our whole, you know, personal lives falling apart. But as engaged as you can be individually, be engaged. Because it actually, in some of these situations where you feel helpless, and you feel like there is no solution and nobody's doing anything, sometimes it can actually be self-care to do some things.
There you go.
And to take some action. So I would say call your members of Congress.
Vent. Yep, I love the venting. Go.
Yeah, do some venting. If there's a protest in your area, protest. And then, you know, do what feels good to you in your family, you know, in your friendships, in your social life, at work.
So I need to live my life, okay?
Live your life, take a break.
I need to vent, and I need to actually get a life, okay?
And then you need to make sure you're registered to vote, and then you need to vote.
No, I'm a super voter. That's not a problem.
I mean, this is where we're at.
That's okay.
I don't think that's changed. I don't think any of that has changed. I mean, that is still our civic duty as Americans. And just because the Republicans aren't doing their job doesn't mean that, you know, we get to stop doing ours.
There it is.
We have to keep resisting.
As always, great stuff, Jane. I appreciate the time. Thank you so much. I feel a lot better.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
As we all should. Thanks so much.
All right. Have a great week.
You as well. Good talking with you. Look, because you can get bogged down in this. I mean, this could be, you know, you could take this and it, you know, really drive you into despair. You know, Andrea's been right. Propane Jane's right. We need to find each other. We need to come together. We need to stand together, shoulder to shoulder. We need to move forward and march. Lots of marching, especially on November 6th. Right to the polls to vote the bums out. That simple. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top.